Welcome to the Phoenix Helix Podcast, dedicated to maximizing autoimmune health through the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol and functional medicine. While there is no cure for autoimmune disease, the choices we make every day can have a powerful impact on how we feel. I'm Eileen Laird, your host from PhoenixHelix.com, and I reduced my rheumatoid arthritis pain by 95%, which took me from a life of excruciating pain and disability back to a full and beautiful life. A short disclaimer. I'm neither a doctor nor a nutritionist, and the opinions expressed here are personal. Always consult with your healthcare team before making medical decisions. Now let's get on to the show. Welcome to episode 163. One of the ways I take care of my autoimmune health is that I try to take a sabbatical every December. And what I do is I choose two popular episodes from the podcast archives you might have missed. And today, the episode I'm sharing with you is one of the most popular of all time. It's called DNRS. If you have symptoms without a diagnosis or symptoms that remain in spite of all of the interventions you've tried, this episode is for you. DNRS is a therapy based on neuroplasticity. Our brains change and adapt to life experiences, sometimes in positive ways, but other times in negative ones. With chronic illness, symptoms can actually become wired into our brains even when the triggers for those symptoms are removed. DNRS is designed to rewire the brain for health, and this can improve health body-wide. Some of the conditions often helped by DNRS include fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic Lyme disease, multiple chemical sensitivity, irritable bowel syndrome, mold toxicity, chronic inflammatory response syndrome, mast cell activation, food sensitivities, chronic pain, mental health issues, and more. What's common about many of those conditions that I just mentioned is that they're often called mysterious illnesses, meaning there's no clear cause or effective treatment. In fact, many people I know have multiple diagnoses on this list, yet their symptoms still remain. So that's why I'm excited about this podcast today. DNRS is a treatment you can try at home that approaches your symptoms in a totally new way. I've had many listeners request this topic. Some of them were helped by DNRS and wanted me to spread the word. Others are curious about it because they've heard about it and are kind of confused, don't really have a sense of what it's all about. And one of the reasons I chose this episode as a Best of Phoenix Helix podcast is I've gotten so much positive feedback since it originally aired from more people it's helped. But also now in 2020, there is a new mysterious illness a lot of us have started hearing about. It's called post-COVID syndrome. And it's people who have been infected with the coronavirus, healed from it, but they haven't recovered fully. Their body is still trapped in an inflammation cycle, and DNRS is now being used as a treatment for that as well. So I'm excited that my guest for this episode is the creator of DNRS, Annie Hopper. She'll be explaining the program fully, but before we listen to the conversation, it's time to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Shop AIP, an online store dedicated to the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol, with hundreds of items for the elimination phase of the AIP and products labeled by reintroduction category as well. And this podcast is airing during the December holiday season. And if you're looking for gifts, Shop AIP is a great choice. I love supporting small businesses all the time, but especially in 2020 when business economy has taken such a hit. And Shop AIP is a small business run by a woman with autoimmune disease who knows the AIP inside and out. So for the holidays, they have AIP gift bundles as well as gift certificates available. If you want to order a bundle, order it soon to be sure it arrives in time for the holiday. If you're ordering at the last minute, though, go ahead and buy one of their gift certificates. They are sent by email immediately to the recipient. So if you actually want it to arrive on a specific day on whichever holiday you personally celebrate, you can enter your email address in the recipient line. The gift certificate will be sent to you and you can give it to your loved one on the day you choose. So as always, you can go directly to their website, shopaip.com, and use the code Phoenix, P-H-O-E-N-I-X, for 10% off your order. and I will also include links in the show notes. Okay, let's learn about DNRS. Welcome to the podcast, Annie.
Oh, thank you so much, Eileen. It's so nice to be here with you.
Oh, I'm really excited to have you here. I like to start the show with personal healing stories, and so I'm going to ask you a slight twist on my normal questions. What was your life like when your health was at its worst? What's it like now? And then how did the DNRS techniques help you?
Yeah, well, it's a really great question. And I guess when I started to develop limbic system impairment, I was a core belief counselor and I was really engaged in my life, had a successful career and everything was going well. But at its worst, I became sensitive to everything. I think I'll backtrack and just tell you a little bit about the story. So I was living in Kelowna, BC, Canada. I was working as a core belief counselor. I was also a newspaper columnist, and I was featured on the radio as an expert in emotional wellness. And I was just ticking along in my life, having a really great time. I was in a very happy relationship. I was engaged in my community in a lot of different ways. And I slowly started to develop symptoms of chemical sensitivities, fibromyalgia, and eventually electric hypersensitivity syndrome. But what happened is I moved into a building when I was a counselor, I moved into this new office. And unfortunately, the building itself was a sick building, meaning that there was mold in the building. And also my office was located right next door to the janitor supply room, where I was being exposed to a whole lot of chemicals throughout the day. And prior to moving into this building, I had been in a car accident probably about a year earlier where I had damage to my neck from that car accident. But anyway, I started to develop sensitivities and really a whole lot of odd symptoms when I was in this office, which ranged from insomnia to joint and muscle pain and an increasing list of sensitivities. It was really odd. What I didn't realize is that my sense of smell was heightening. And I also started to become sensitive to chemicals and everyday products that people might use, like perfumes and colognes and laundry detergent and fabric softeners and cleaning products and just kind of products that are in everyday living. And all of a sudden, those products started to take on a really different quality. It almost felt like I was being poisoned. And it was quite alarming and really shocking. And I started to develop a lot of symptoms because of that. And it was isolating my life a lot. Like I had to, because my symptoms were getting more and more severe, and to give you an idea of what that would look like, if I was walking down the street and somebody happened to be doing their laundry and they had dryer exhaust floating through the air, if I walked through that, I might go into convulsions. So it was getting really hard to navigate my daily life. So I'd have to wear a mask anytime that I went out. And you can imagine if those are the kind of symptoms that you have when you go out, then generally speaking, I spent a lot of time at home. So what I found over time is that my life was becoming more and more isolated. I had to withdraw from my social life. I had to withdraw from working. I had to kind of withdraw from everything and stay at home a lot. And then at its worst, I actually developed electromagnetic sensitivity, or what is known as electric hypersensitivity syndrome. And pretty much I started having the same symptoms with exposure to EMFs, which are found everywhere in wireless. You know, I was sensitive to electronics. And at that point, I actually had to leave my home and I became homeless. I say that in an interesting way because it's not that I didn't have money or that I didn't have a lot of well-meaning people in my life that would have loved for me to stay with them, but that my system had become so sensitized that I was picking up on the smallest molecules of chemicals and electromagnetic fields as if they were life-threatening. So at that point, the only thing that I could do, or the only thing I felt like I could do, was complete avoidance, which meant moving away from everything that gave me any kind of sense of security. So that's the point that I became homeless. So from that point to where I am now, well, and I should say my whole focus was about how to survive, how to get through another day, just how to live and make it from day to day. Let's go to where my life is now. Well, 10 years later, I travel around the world teaching people how to recover. I speak at medical conferences, educating doctors and patients alike about the limbic system, about environmental trauma and how that could affect the brain, and about how to rehabilitate the limbic system so that we can recover from all of these so-called mysterious illnesses. So I think that kind of covers what my life is like today. I go anywhere I want. I do anything that I want. I have boundless energy. And yeah, my life is full and complete. So I think I'll stop there. That's the before and there's the after.
Yeah. And it's such a dramatic story. And it's one that I think a lot of listeners can relate to. It's really common for people in this community to just be hypersensitive in general. And that, of course, has a whole spectrum. And you were on the extreme end of it. And I definitely have podcast listeners who've told me that they're afraid to leave home because when they go outside, they are exposed. They're no longer in control of the environment. And they're exposed to things that just knock them flat. It's not a small thing. I think people who haven't experienced that, it's really hard to understand. It's not just where it's annoying or uncomfortable or unpleasant. It's like you described it. Your body is somehow seeing a life-threatening situation where there isn't necessarily a life-threatening situation. So you ended up developing the DNRS techniques as part of how to heal yourself. When you were trying things that didn't work, you dove into the research and came up with the techniques we'll be talking about today. So let's start at the beginning for people before we get into all of the specifics. I mentioned one term, neuroplasticity. You mentioned another term, limbic system trauma. Let's define those key terms for people.
Sure, absolutely. So neuroplasticity just means that the brain is capable of change. So we know that the brain changes all the time. The brain has changed through the thoughts that we think, our emotions, our behaviors, but also the brain has changed through trauma. And that's specifically the area that we look at, is how the brain has been changed through trauma and how to correct that. And, you know, there could be various forms of trauma that might affect the way that the brain works. You know, it could be viral trauma, chemical trauma, bacterial trauma, psychological trauma, emotional trauma, or physical trauma. And all of those traumas have the ability to really affect the limbic system in the brain. And the limbic system is basically a number of areas in the midbrain that are located in the midbrain, or a number of structures that are located in the midbrain. And really what the limbic system is responsible for is it's known as the feeling and reacting brain. And it basically filters the billions of bits of sensory and emotional information or stimuli into two very distinct categories, threat or no threat. And you can imagine that if the system is not working somehow or it's damaged somehow, that the brain could start to categorize information as a threat that is actually not a threat. And that is exactly what happens with limbic system impairment. And I believe that it's at the root of a lot of these so-called mysterious illnesses.
Well described. That makes complete sense. And in some ways, it makes sense that that can get misfired, because there is a trauma that does trigger a threat response in an appropriate way. It's just that threat response keeps on getting triggered by smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller things. Would that be an accurate description?
Yeah, Eileen, that's a really accurate description. It's like the brain gets stuck in a flight or flight response, even though the trauma is no longer present or the stimuli is no longer a threat. The brain is just stuck in that chronic alarm state, and it stays stuck there. And when your brain is in that chronic flight or flight state, and it's, I have to backtrack just a little bit, it's not a conscious process. Like, this is something that's going on in a subconscious way. You're not really aware that this is happening, but you'll have the symptoms of that happening. So, you know, when your brain is stuck in a flight or flight response, you can imagine that, you know, you could have inflammation, pain, also distorted sensory perception. And that one's really interesting because when I think about that, you know, if we were running away from something that we perceived was attacking us somehow, our senses would increase in a self-protective way, where, you know, we would, our vision would improve, our hearing would improve, we would be able to smell things easier, we would be able to taste things more accurately, or, you know, we would really be able to discern our environment for potential threat. And that's actually a really great response to protect us. But when we're in a chronic maladaptive stress response or that chronic fight or flight response, what happens is our senses heighten, but they get stuck there because the brain is always perceiving that we're under attack. So we get this distorted sensory perception thing going on in the background, but also it affects the way that we think because we constantly feel like we're under some kind of threat. We're viewing the world through the lens of threat because the brain is stuck in this pattern. Then it will inevitably affect the way that we think about the world and also the way that we feel. And I liked what you said. You know, I think that we need to understand that there are two truths happening here, which is, yes, there's the original trauma, which could be environmental. It could be from chemicals or virus or bacteria, etc. But the second truth is that the brain has been impaired and the brain is now picking up on small amounts of that stimuli as life-threatening. And that's where the program really focuses is on that second truth, really correcting those maladapted patterns within the limbic system so that our body function goes back into that state of rest and digestion where healing can actually take place. And when that happens, our sensory perception actually starts to normalize again, which feels actually quite miraculous when that happens, because when you're in that state of flight or flight, or when your senses are so heightened, you can't even imagine that you could ever go back to being normal again. But it's so true. Like when you're back into that state of rest and digestion, all of your senses go back to normal again. And it feels quite miraculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you described that the heightened sense originally was a protective drive, and then it becomes harmful. And that just reminds me of autoimmune disease in general, which we talk about a lot on this podcast, is it's our immune system actually trying to help. It's just gone a little haywire.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, when you have limbic system impairment and the brain is stuck in that flight or flight response, it can cause inappropriate activation of the immune system, of the endocrine system, of our autonomic nervous system responses. So it definitely can lead to autoimmune illnesses as well. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's get into the details of your program. So what is DNRS and how does it work?
Yeah, sure. DNRS stands for the Dynamic Neuro Retraining System. So it's a drug-free neurorehabilitation approach to rewiring neural circuits in the limbic system that help to alleviate symptoms of chronic illness. Now, the great thing about the program, there are many great things about the program, I have to say, but the really great thing about the program is that it's self-directed and it's drug-free, which means that people can do this from the comfort of their own home. And I think the other thing is that you don't have to continuously pay someone to help you with this. Like once you know these tools and you have these tools and you get to practice on your own, which is great. So what it does, the focus of our program is to really look at how to get the brain out of that fight or flight response. The first thing we look at is, how can you really identify when the brain is stuck in this maladaptive stress response? So really looking at patterns within yourself, how can you identify those patterns? So really bringing conscious awareness to those patterns, whether those patterns are thought patterns, emotional patterns, behavioral patterns, or symptomology of the body itself. So really looking at becoming aware of those patterns within yourself, and then learning how to really redirect those patterns in moment-to-moment time. So, you know, when we're aware of those patterns, how do we step in a very particular way, in a very specific way to start redirecting the brain to other patterns. We also use exercises, visualization exercises, and incremental training exercises, which is a form of neural shaping to desensitize the limbic system to stimuli and also to structurally and chemically change the brain. And also looking at recognizing that this isn't an overnight cure. This takes time. And the model of recovery is quite different because it's not necessarily a linear process of recovery. And it can take quite some time. And what we ask people to do when they're implementing the program is to really focus on implementing all of the pillars of recovery for the program for at least 6 months or a minimum of 6 months. So again, not an overnight process, but the results are quite phenomenal.
So when you say doing all of the pillars of recovery for 6 months, I think some people listening, what's the commitment on a daily basis?
Well, the commitment on a daily basis is at least an hour. But having said that, I would say that it's kind of a mindfulness practice in some ways, that there are specific exercises that you're going to do for at least an hour that include visualization, that include incremental training about challenging your brain in new ways. But also throughout the day, you actually have to become aware of, you know, how your thinking patterns, emotional patterns, and behavioral patterns might actually be a symptom of the actual impairment itself and how to redirect the brain throughout the day. So in that way, it's kind of a throughout the day kind of exercise, but there are also specific techniques and a step-by-step process that has to be done for a minimum of an hour a day to change the brain chemically as well.
And so for our listeners, just to let you know, Annie and I are trying to describe verbally something that is multi-layered and includes physical movements as well as mental visualizations and all sorts of things. And that's challenging to do. So this can be learned in two ways, through an in-person 5-day seminar or a 14-hour DVD series. And we'll talk about that at the end of the podcast. But here I'm just trying to get a sense of how people can incorporate it into their lives and help people understand how it can work. One of the things you mentioned, which I found interesting, is the neural shaping exercises you're talking about. The goal of those is to change the brain structure and chemicals without using chemicals. So explain to people how that happens, because it's fascinating. The brain is just fascinating.
If I talked about just incremental training, and I'm going to backtrack for a second and talk about the five pillars here for a second. And let's see if this makes sense. So the five pillars of recovery. The first pillar is that you have to understand that this is a brain impairment. When I was looking at my own situation, I went to see every specialist out there, everyone in the Western medical field, everyone in the alternative medical field, and I did everything that they said. I worked everything to the moon and back, and yet I was still sick and getting worse. And I thought, oh my goodness, I knew intuitively that my brain was involved because it was so interesting. If I had any kind of exposure to chemicals when I was chemically sensitive, I would immediately get brain fog. And not only brain fog, but the inability to actually formulate sentences. Like, I became stupid all of a sudden. I just could not actually communicate. And I thought, oh my goodness, I feel like something's wrong with my brain. And I know a lot of people are going to be able to identify that. And the other thing that I looked at was, I would have an exposure and I would immediately start to cry, which was really interesting because I wasn't actually upset about it. It was like a physiological response that I was having to exposure. And I thought, wow, this is not, maybe toxic overload had something to do with the original trauma, or maybe a chemical exposure or the mold or whatever had something to do with the original trauma. But now it's becoming a brain impairment. So I really started to look at what area of the brain was responsible for sense of smell, because it made sense to me that that would be the area to look at. And when I started to investigate, I found out that yes, indeed, that's the limbic system. So that's where I focused my efforts, was how could I learn about the limbic system? How could I create changes in the limbic system? So the first pillar of recovery is recognizing that this is a brain impairment, that your brain is involved in the illness, and that the focus of the program is to continuously come back to that first pillar. This is a brain impairment. We are focusing on the brain. Now, the second pillar of recovery is something that we call bringing awareness to POPs. And POPs stands for pathways of the past. So those are going to be psychological, emotional, or behavioral symptoms or patterns that relate to the impairment itself. So what kind of thinking patterns do you have that might be an actual expression of the impairment itself? What kind of emotional states are you entertaining that might actually be an expression of the impairment itself? What kind of behaviors are you entertaining that might be an expression of the impairment itself? So really looking at, okay, hang on, if this is a brain impairment, how is it expressing in my day-to-day life? And then looking at, you know, ways to change the brain chemically. So if we go to the POPs exercise, the second pillar of recovery, we're really changing the brain structurally through catching our thoughts and our behaviors and such. But then looking at the third pillar of recovery, which is really implementing the exercises that we show, which is a step-by-step process that includes movement, it includes speech and visualizations. How do we change the brain chemically? And that's what we do through that step. Is there is a step-by-step process that we go through, which is how to heighten your emotional state so that you can change the neural circuitry in the brain and really dampen that threat response in the exact time that it's needed to make those changes in the neural networks of the brain. Now, the fourth pillar of recovery is to really elevate your emotional state as much as you possibly can, not only while you're doing the program, but to also the actual exercises, but throughout the day. Because when we're in limbic system impairment, it's interesting, you know, that threat mechanism is firing too rapidly and too often, and we're viewing the world through the lens of threat. So we need to be able to counteract that. And not only that, but our brain has this kind of innate negativity bias, meaning that we're going to notice what's wrong before we're going to notice what's going well. And that goes back to a self-protective mechanism. So you can imagine if you have this threat mechanism that's overfiring in your limbic system, that negativity bias can actually be magnified. So we really have to be mindful of changing our emotional state, not only during the exercises itself, but also throughout the course of the day, to really give our brain, to set our brain up for those changes to take place. And the fifth pillar is actually to practice. You know, we need to practice what we do for a minimum of 6 months. So that's a bit about the five pillars of recovery. So I hope that I've clarified that for you.
Yeah, no, that was excellent. Thank you. That helped a lot. So when you say elevate emotion in pillar four, you're talking about elevating it in a positive bias direction rather than the negative bias that's the default state for many of us.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. We're consciously going to use our emotions and our thoughts and our behaviors to act back on the brain to actually change the structure and function of the brain and regulate that stress response.
This helps explain, you know, why it's a multiple hour training program. Some people might be overwhelmed and be like, gosh, I'm so tired already. I already don't feel like I have any mental, emotional, physical capacity. Is this something I can do? In terms of how it's taught, is it taught kind of in a way that feels very approachable? It must. I mean, when you started doing this, you were not at an optimal health state.
No, exactly. We have a 14-hour instructional DVD that people can do from home and they can go at their own pace. We recommend once you start the program to really dive in as much as you can, but you know, you can definitely go at your own pace. We recommend going over the DVDs in 4 days if you can to start implementing what you're learning on a daily basis. But if you have to take it at a slower pace than that, then that's fine too. The other way that we teach the program is over 5 days at our intensive training seminars that we hold at various locations throughout North America and Europe. We teach the program over a course of 5 days, and you're in a small group of 20 or 30 other people that all have limbic system impairment and are there for exactly the same reason. And it's a really powerful, powerful dynamic to be in a group of people that have the focus of recovery in mind. It's quite amazing, actually.
And this is Eileen just popping into the episode for people listening to it during the pandemic. When in-person classes aren't available, Annie has come up with a 12-week online group support to take the place of that, so that you are getting the guidance of a certified facilitator and also peer support. So I will link to that in the show notes. That's one of the things they offer through their website. And we mentioned DVDs, but they also have an online class where you can stream it if you don't have a DVD player, because technology is changing and we're used to doing things on the computer. So just a little update there. Let's get back to the conversation. Annie, are the exercises themselves physically strenuous? Again, I'm guessing not.
No, not really. It involves small movements. But we've had people that have started, they start where they're at. You know, for some people, they start the program when they're bedridden and they can't actually get up. So they don't include the movements, the movement portion, for that reason, but they, you know, visualize themselves doing the movements until they can actually start to move. So, and I'd like to say that's on the extreme end of things. And what you said is correct. I mean, there's such a broad spectrum of illness. It ranges from the really mild, I have anxiety and some sensitivities and maybe fatigue and insomnia, to, you know, the severe end of things where someone is absolutely bedridden and can't get out of bed because they have zero energy. So really you can start where you're at. And the exercises are not that, they're not that difficult at all. It includes some speech, some movement, visualization, but it's really not that difficult at all.
Awesome. So we are already halfway through our interview with lots of great information yet to come. Annie's going to be talking more about the type of results you can expect and how long it takes to achieve those results. She'll be sharing her personal experience as well as some examples from other people. She's also going to explain a little bit more deeply how rewiring the brain impacts health elsewhere in the body, because I know that feels a little counterintuitive to people sometimes, how close that connection is and how powerful the results can be. And then we're going to finish up talking a little bit about DNRS research, both the research that the program is based on and also research studies currently going on regarding DNRS and its effect on the lives of people with chronic illness. But before we do that, it is time to give a shout out to our second podcast sponsor, Paleo On The Go. They are a frozen meal delivery service, and 100% of their menu is compliant with the elimination phase of the Paleo autoimmune protocol. They are another wonderful small business to support this holiday season. They also sell gift certificates as well as meal bundles. I will link to both of those in the show notes. For Paleo On The Go, they do use FedEx for their delivery service, so check their website to see whether or not you still have time to order by Christmas, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. They'll definitely let you know. And if you are looking for a last minute gift, their gift certificates are also emailed out immediately upon receipt. How they have their system set up is whoever buys the gift certificate receives it. And then that way you can forward it to your loved one on the day you want them to get it. So you can go directly to paleoonthego.com. and use the code Phoenix, PHOENIX, for 10% off your order. And I will also include links in the show notes. Okay, back to our interview. Annie, I know that you ask people to do this for 6 months, because for some people it's going to take longer to see results than others. Some people do see results quite quickly. What was your personal experience?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Yes. You know what? Some people see results really, really quickly. For me, I would say that my sense of smell started to change fairly quickly. And that was my sign that I knew that the brain was involved. I thought nothing else could do that. My sense of smell started to normalize. And then it kind of went in and out, like would have this like really heightened sensitivity, and then it would normalize for a couple of minutes, and then I would have really heightened sensitivity again, and then it would normalize. So until the normal kind of state became my regular, you know, resting state. But I started to see some changes within a few days, absolutely. And it's not uncommon for people to start seeing some kind of change within, you know, a couple of weeks of training anyway. It doesn't mean that they're going to be recovered by any stretch of the imagination, and they're going to have to train for a minimum of 6 months to really lay down those new pathways in the brain. But it's not uncommon for people to start seeing some form of change within a few weeks.
I think sometimes it's easier for people to understand how rewiring the brain can help with mental health issues, but let's talk a little bit more about how the brain impacts the entire body, because this technique has helped people with digestive symptoms, chronic pain, inflammation, organ function, improved detoxification, normalization of sensitivities, like you described, to electrical radiation, as well as chemicals. And then, in my understanding, some people have seen improvements in food sensitivities too.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think that if we look at it from a broad perspective, it makes a lot of sense. So if you can imagine that your brain is stuck in this trauma response, you're stuck in this fight or flight response. And if we use the analogy that you're running away from a tiger, let's say, and when you're running away from a tiger, it's going to affect your communication. So let's start with looking at how would it affect your ability to communicate? Well, it would actually affect not only cell to cell communication, because your systems would be in shutdown, right? And conserving all energy for this fight or flight response, but also it affects the way that your brain actually functions, your thought processes, and your ability to communicate. It also, you can imagine if you're running away from a tiger, that you wouldn't be phoning anyone to say that, hey, you know, I'm running away from a tiger right now. Or you'd be texting your friends saying, oh my goodness, I'm running away from a tiger. You know, the only thing that's important in that moment is your survival, to get away from whatever you perceive as a threat. So it's going to affect the way that the cells communicate in your body. It's also going to affect digestion and absorption and your ability to rest and digest. So again, if you use that same analogy, running away from a tiger, it's not important for you to absorb nutrients or to digest your food or to sleep if you're being chased by a tiger. Also, detoxification issues or detoxification systems are not seen as primary or important when you're in fight or flight. And again, if you were running away from a tiger, you can imagine that going to the bathroom would not be an important thing. So your primary objective is to run away from the tiger. Also, when you're in that chronic stress response, it's going to affect your immune system. So your immune system is not working as effectively because all of your energy is being used to, again, run away from the tiger. Also, your endocrine system is going to be changed because you're going to be releasing neurochemicals or hormones that are responsible for stress or related to stress. So you have an overproduction of cortisol and adrenaline that keep the brain and body stuck in this fight or flight response too. And, you know, it's going to affect things in our autonomic nervous system, like your heart rate, blood pressure, and so on. And when you look at food sensitivities, it's interesting because the vagus nerve is implied a lot here. And the vagus nerve is responsible for our autonomic nervous function, or related to a lot of organs that are related to autonomic nervous system function. So the vagus nerve takes direct cues from the brain about levels of safety. So if your brain is sending messages to the rest of your body, including your vagus nerve, that you're in this fight or flight state, then the vagus nerve will be sending those messages to the organs of your body too, saying that it's not safe. We have to hunker down until the threat goes away. But what happens with these chronic illnesses is that the brain is stuck in that response, and the threat is perceived as if it's there all the time. So you can imagine when you shut off that, or when you regulate that response, then all of those systems can go back to normal again. And that's why we see so many people recovering from various different illnesses, because that's exactly what's happening. The brain and body is going from that state of survival into a state of growth and repair, where healing can actually take place.
That makes sense. And it's so, gosh, the body and the brain, just so incredibly fascinating to me. So when you talk about improvements for people, what results can people expect? I would think that just like with illness, there's a wide spectrum. With healing, sometimes that's true as well. What have you seen?
Well, that's a really great question. I've seen people fully recover from life-threatening illnesses that they never thought that they would recover from. When people ask me what I do, and I don't say this lightly, I say that I'm in the business of witnessing medical miracles, and that's not a lie. If you look at our website at retrainingthebrain.com and you look at some of the success stories, it's absolutely unbelievable. Like we don't have anything within our medical model that actually shows these kinds of improvements. Now, is everyone going to get full recovery? That would be silly of me to suggest that everybody's going to become fully recovered. But I follow that with, you know, when you actually implement the program in the way that it's laid out, as it's laid out, then your brain has no choice but to make the changes that you're asking it to make. It's basically like practicing a new language. If you practice it enough, then the brain will start to make those changes. One example that I can share with you is Lauren. She had postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, along with a host of sensitivities and food sensitivities, light sensitivities, sound sensitivities, chemical sensitivities, chronic fatigue syndrome. A whole list of illnesses. And Lauren's starting point was in a wheelchair. Actually, her starting point before that was probably in a darkened room, and she couldn't actually handle any kind of sound. And her mobility at that time was in a wheelchair. She couldn't actually stand or sit upright because if she sat upright or she went to stand, her heart rate would skyrocket and her blood pressure would drop so low that she might go unconscious. So that was her starting point. Within a month of starting the program, she actually was rollerblading. And that might seem so fantastic that you can't even wrap your head around it. Like, how is that possible? But when you actually start to address this illness from a brain perspective and really make changes to the deep wiring in the brain, then those kind of changes are possible because we have the right entry point. So not to say that Lauren was rollerblading all the time, but she was actually able to stand up. She was able to get on rollerblade. She started being able to walk, to do normal things in life. And now Lauren is married with a 2-year-old son and another baby on the way and living a fully normal life. So, you know, that's an example of someone that I've seen recover. Another one was Riley. Riley had chronic Lyme disease. And although Riley had tried a lot of treatments that were beneficial, I might add, they were really beneficial, he was still suffering with movement function, like a movement disorder. He was still suffering from a host of sensitivities and food sensitivities with anxiety and OCD-like tendencies. And he's made a full recovery too. So those are some of the stories that I would, that just come to mind, but there are so many. You know, we have a community forum for people that have gone through the program, either the DVD or the 5-day intensive program. They can be a part of the community forum where people share their victories or their successes or, you know, how they're implementing the program. And we have, I don't know, almost 4,000 members on that. And there are so many inspiring stories on there. I don't even know where to start. And it all sounds, you know, almost too good to be true. But when you really look at making changes from a brain perspective, when this is a brain impairment, then changes can and do happen.
That's awesome. Let me ask you the flip side. Sometimes sure. when you're treated for trauma, whatever that treatment may be, there can be, I think they call it like a backdraft, where sometimes things get worse before they get better. Does that ever happen to people with GNRS?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that, you know, I would say that the trajectory of recovery is not a linear process. So what's really different about this is, although we come to the program hoping that this will decrease our symptoms, and what that's exactly what does happen over the course of time, we can't use our symptoms as an indicator of recovery, which is kind of defies gravity in some way, because isn't that what we're looking for, is a decrease in symptoms? And inevitably that does happen. But when you're working with neuroplasticity and the brain, especially in neurorehabilitation, that's not necessarily the process. You might start to feel improvements, and then you might have some symptoms come up, and then you notice improvements again, and then you have symptoms come up, and then you notice improvements. I mean, overall, the trajectory is absolutely upwards, but it could be that you start feeling better and then you hit a plateau, or you have a few more symptoms, but you just continue to implement the neurorehabilitation practices throughout that. So it's a really good question. I don't really call it getting worse. It's just a different way of healing through neuroplasticity.
That makes sense. When you talk about your recovery and some other people who have recovered to a really high degree, do you need to continue the daily exercises once you've achieved the improvements that you want to achieve? Or is it kind of a permanent rewiring?
Yeah, it's a permanent rewiring. It's a great question. You know, sometimes I think, wow, could I use doing the program? And only because I think it's really good for managing stress and on any level. But no, I'm not symptomatic at all. So no, I haven't used the program in a very, very, very long time. I think that some people use it, but, and it's a tool for life though. You know, now that I know how to change those stress circuits or those maladapted stress circuits in the brain, if there was ever a time when I needed to, I have the tools in my back pocket and I can use them at any time. But no, I don't have to practice anymore. My brain is fully rewired.
That's really inspirational for people too. So you developed the DNRS program after delving into a lot of research into neuroplasticity and limbic system trauma. Who are the leaders in this field of research today? And are there any, you know, books you'd recommend for people who would like to learn more about the field in general?
Yeah, sure. One of the biggest influencers for me, or one of my biggest influences, was Dr. Norman Doidge. And he's a Canadian psychiatrist who wrote the book, The Brain That Changes Itself. That was probably my biggest influence. He really talked about how the brain is capable of change. And in that book, there are a lot of different neuroplasticians that he's interviewing that are doing some really wonderful things with people that were diagnosed with illnesses that were incurable. And now these people have their lives back. So he's not necessarily dealing with limbic system trauma, and that's what makes what we're doing very new, but he's looking at the application of neuroplasticity in a really broad spectrum and how it can help various different illnesses. And it was in that book that I really had a huge aha moment. He was interviewing Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz, who's like the guru of obsessive compulsive disorder. And what they were talking about is that in OCD, there's a part of the brain that's not working functionally called the caudate nucleus that keeps people. And because that part of the brain is stuck, it manifests as people being stuck in that feeling of contamination, and it prevents the person from actually moving from one thought to another. And that made complete sense to me, because I thought, okay, you know, I don't really have OCD, but what I do have, what it does feel like to me is that my brain is stuck in this fight or flight response, and it's affecting my sensory perception. It's affecting my thought processes. It's affecting my emotions. It's affecting various different systems of my body. And I thought, what if we can correct that mechanism in the brain? What if all of the symptoms are actually related to that mechanism that's gone rogue, some kind of threat mechanism in my brain that's gone rogue? And that was a really good thought to have. And that actually changed everything. So those two people have been absolutely huge influences in my personal life and in the creation of the program itself. And all of the neuroplasticians that Dr. Norman Doidge actually mentions in his book, Dr. Ramachandran, who works with phantom limb pain and the use of imagination, Dr. Pascal Lioni, who talks about the power of thought and how thought alone can change the structure and function of the brain. And Dr. Edward Taub, who actually created something called constraint-induced therapy for patients who had strokes, and the newest exercises for people for stroke rehabilitation. So really looking at those people and how they applied the principles of neuroplasticity and how I could apply those same principles in a different way to help people recover from limbic system impairment. There are other people that are really big leaders in the field now, right now, too. I would say Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, of course, in My Stroke of Insight. She was a big influence as well. That's all the people that I can think of right now.
Oh, it's a great list. And for our listeners, I'll go ahead and include links in the show notes so you can read some of those books and learn more about those people. Annie, are there any plans for an official DNRS medical study to be completed? And as I ask that question, I know it's really hard to get funding for a technique that doesn't have a lifetime profit potential.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, this isn't pharmaceutically based, right? So I don't think there are going to be any pharmaceutical funders for a self-directed neuroplasticity-based treatment. However, having said that, we do have two research studies going on right now. I'm very excited. There's one study being done by McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, and they're looking at symptom improvement with the program for people that have various chronic illnesses. I think there were 14 kind of different diagnoses that people, actually there were more than 14. I think the average person had 7 or 8 different diagnoses, and it ranges from, you know, chemical sensitivities to fibromyalgia to chronic fatigue syndrome, irritable bowel syndrome, chronic Lyme disease, food sensitivities, neurological issues. It's just across the board. So we're looking at how did those people improve with applying the program over a period of a year. So they followed 100 participants who attended the 5-day interactive training seminar and looked at 7 standardized surveys to see how their symptomology is improved over that course of a year. And the results of that research are actually, they should be coming out fairly soon. So that's really exciting. And the second research study that's going on underway is at the University of Calgary, again in Canada, where we're looking at doing qualitative, quantitative, and functional imaging for 100 people that have either chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, or chemical sensitivities, multiple chemical sensitivity, and looking at how the program, when applying the program for a duration of a year, how that changes brain function and many other systems of the body. So we're in, I think, phase 2 of that study, and I don't know what the timeline on that one is. You know, academia works at a different timeline than we do, but it's really exciting to have the interest of the medical community. And you know, a lot of people find out about our program now because their doctors are referring to the program. That just makes me so happy, because in the beginning I thought, you know, this is such a new paradigm. How am I going to get this information out? And my thought was, rather than trying to convince people that it works or convince the medical system that it works, because it's a completely different paradigm, is we're going to focus our attention on helping people that need help. And when enough of those people start to recover, they're going to go back to their doctors and tell them about the program. And that's exactly what happened. So many people are recovering through the program that they go back to their doctors and say, oh my goodness, you really should know about this program because it's really helping me. And then doctors started referring people to the program. I also am invited to speak at medical conferences now. So I spoke at the Institute for Functional Medicine annual conference last July. I'll be speaking at another conference in September in Dallas. It's actually an autism conference, but it deals with much more than autism. I'll be speaking about other chronic and mysterious illnesses. And I'll also be speaking at a brain regeneration conference in Florida in November for a lot of doctors that attend these conferences. So I'm really happy that the medical system is actually paying attention. And, you know, I think it's time. This is a new paradigm in healing, and one that's needed and one that is necessary, because there are far too many people suffering, and that suffering needs to stop. And it's not just about, you know, I used to say, you know, we're in the business of decreasing suffering and improving quality of life. And while that's true, it's not just about decreasing suffering. It's actually about helping people to reclaim their health and to reclaim optimal health and to reclaim their life. And I'm so blessed to be in the position where I get to watch that time and time again.
It's amazing how much has changed in the, have you been doing this for 10 years now?
Yeah, this is our 10th year anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Well, happy anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. For people who want to keep up with that research and know when it gets published, do you have like a newsletter or a blog, or should they just check back to your website, or how does that?
Yeah, actually, they could sign up for our newsletter on our website at retrainingthebrain.com. They'll find a spot there where they can sign up for our newsletter. I think it's on the homepage. Also, we have a blog on our website, so they can start to follow our blog as well. So absolutely, when we can announce the research, we'll announce it through our newsletter, on our website, in every which way that we can.
And this is Eileen popping in again on the Best Of episode to let you all know that the McMaster research has been published, and I will include a link in the show notes. And the results were dramatic. The University of Calgary research is still ongoing. And so if you subscribe to that newsletter, you'll be the first to know about the results for that. Annie, thank you so much for, you know, describing your program in so much detail. I know some of our listeners will want to give it a try. So tell them more about how they can learn this technique.
Yeah, sure. So we offer the program in two different formats. One is through 14-hour instructional DVD, which can be ordered on our website. And I think there are four different packages there. You can buy it with my book, which is called Wired for Healing, Remapping the Brain to Recover from Chronic and Mysterious Illnesses. So you can buy the package that comes with my book, or you can buy a package that comes with a transcription, which is a word for word documentation of the entire DVD series. So there are a lot of different packages that you can buy, or attend one of the 5-day interactive seminars. Those are listed on our website as well. Upcoming program locations and dates are listed there. And on top of that, we have a lot of follow-up support for people. So anyone who's gone through the program, send us a notice that they've completed, and we'll send them an invitation to join the community forum. But also we have individualized coaching. So these are our certified DNRS coaches that can help people get clarity on how to implement the program or how to tailor the program for their specific needs. So we have a lot of follow-up resources available for people too.
And when you mention your book, the book is different from the DVD series. I'm thinking the book is an expansion on the conversation you and I had, but it doesn't teach you the techniques. You really need the DVDs or the class to learn the techniques. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. The book is more about my own story, about the science behind the program. And mm-hmm. also it has various recovery stories of people that have recovered from limbic system impairment.
Awesome. So it's a great introduction.
It's a great introduction. And you know, it's funny. Some people say, I started feeling better even just with reading the book, because I finally had an understanding of what was actually happening. And that understanding, I think it gave them a sense of hope, you know, that they didn't have to live that way for the rest of their life. So no, but you're right. The book does not have the exercises in it.
And another nice update for anyone listening to this Best Of episode in 2020. There are now in-person group Zoom classes available, as I mentioned earlier, in place of the in-person classes because of the pandemic. And I imagine those Zoom classes will still be available after the pandemic has passed. And the DVDs are still available, but you can also stream the videos online. So again, I'll have links in the show notes to all of those possible ways to learn the program. Any final words before we close out our interview?
Yeah, I think the final words that I would have for people are to never give up, no matter what your state right now. Doesn't matter how many doctors that you've been to see. It doesn't matter how many alternative practitioners that you've been to see. Don't give up hope. There is an answer. And, you know, we have to look at these illnesses from a brain perspective. And when we look at these illnesses from a brain perspective and we start to make those changes in a self-directed neuroplastic way to limbic system circuits in the brain, and you get out of that state of survival, then the body and brain are quite intelligent, and we can actually change the trajectory of our life, not only for our lives, but the lives of our families, our loved ones, our children, our grandchildren. And I hope that this interview has given you pause for thought and also hope for your future. And please take the next step. We actually offer a satisfaction guarantee on our DVDs because I know that people have tried so many different things by the time that they reach us, that we're just that one added treatment that, you know, they add to the list of a zillion treatments that they've tried. And I just want to assure you that we're not just going to be a treatment on a list of treatments that you've tried. And approaching these illnesses from a brain impairment perspective is a different paradigm and one that is changing lives. So I hope that it gives you hope.
Well, this was a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time, and I hope you have a beautiful day.
Thank you too, Eileen. Thank you. It's been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you.
So that's our show for today. Visit phoenixhelix.com for show notes. I'll be posting a summary of what we discussed here today, along with links to more information. That's phoenixhelix.com. I've also written 4 books, The Simple Guide to the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol, 85 Amazing AIP Breakfasts, the Paleo AIP Instant Pot Cookbook, and Reintroducing Foods on the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol. You can find those through the books menu on my website or just scroll down my homepage. Also, if you liked today's podcast episode, please leave a positive review on iTunes. I know that takes some extra effort on your part, but it really helps new listeners find the show. And also be sure to subscribe to the podcast yourself so you never miss an episode. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another great show. But before we go, I'd like to say a special thank you to my husband, Tom, who played the beautiful guitar you heard at the start of this episode and is now going to sing us home.
The show is over. I'll be on my